Good morning. This is The Coffee Table. I'm Quentin Chandler. Today, we are going to be discussing the near and far future of the Alaska Marine Highway System. And my guest here today is Department of Transportation Deputy Commissioner Mike Neusel. Hello, Mr. Neusel.
Good morning, Quentin. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad. How about you?
Doing fine.
Glad to have you on. As I said, we're going to be discussing the Alaska Marine Highway System. Can you explain your role with the Marine Highway System for us?
Certainly. I'm a deputy commissioner in the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. So I work for Commissioner Lucan, who works for the governor. There are three deputies within the department, one for aviation, one for highways and public facilities, and myself for the Marine Highway System. And then the Marine Highway System itself, general manager on down throughout the vessel fleets and all our terminals, report directly up through me.
Right. And have you had a long history with ferries and the ferry system?
I have not had a long history. I was a active duty Coast Guard officer for a 30-year period of time. 12 of those years in Alaska, flying helicopters, stationed in Sitka, Kodiak, and Juneau twice, two different assignments in Juneau, and retired from the Coast Guard here. Started with the Department of Transportation as Deputy Commissioner in 2010. Held the job for 2 years through the very beginning, January 2013. Was out of the role for a couple of years and then brought back this past February, actually almost a year previous to today, February 2nd, when I started again.
I see. So you do have quite a bit of experience in the maritime world and have been involved with ferries in some aspects, even if it was indirectly in the past. So I am going to give you a softball question now. Wondering if you can explain for us what the Alaska Marine Highway System is, just starting out.
Certainly, and just back to your initial comment there, I do have a lot of experience with the ferry system for my four different assignments in Alaska. For every move into, out of, or within the state of Alaska, it was all done by the Alaska Marine Highway System to get my family, myself, and our vehicles to and from those assignments. So probably a big customer ahead of time before actually taking over and managing the system. So. What does the Alaska Marine Highway System do? It is a marine highway, I think that word is in there intentionally, to connect the remote and isolated communities of southeast, south central Alaska, Prince William Sound, and the Aleutian Chain to a road system. It is that connection to those road systems that makes us a highway, and we serve 33 communities in Alaska, two communities outside of Alaska, Prince Rupert and Bellingham, and connect all of those communities to each other and to the road system for additional travel opportunities.
Right. So that's 33 Alaskan communities, and some of these communities, Homer is one of them, but some of these communities need the system, the Marine Highway System, more than others. Can you go into that?
I wouldn't necessarily classify it more than others, but I think all coastal communities need the Alaska Marine Highway System. We do provide a benefit to communities even if they're not directly served by the Alaska Marine Highway System, and I'll get into that in a second. So direct needs, an isolated community, no road access, and in some cases not really much of an airport access, and I'm thinking of the southeast community of Angoon. They don't have an airport. They don't really have barge service, they have float plane service, or they have the Marine Highway System. They're a very isolated community. We provide a major transportation link for them. But for every community we serve in southeast Alaska, south central Alaska, Prince William Sound, we provide that connection to the road system to essentially connect them to the rest of the world in terms of driving a vehicle or transporting cargo, commercial vehicles, those types of things. Or even for walk-on passengers, although our walk-on passenger traffic has declined slightly over the years. But we do serve communities beyond the coastal communities. In terms of where people live that make reservations on the Marine Highway System, Anchorage is like second on that list. There's a lot of military folks coming in and out of the state. There's a lot of bookings and a lot of population center, obviously, in Anchorage. But there's a lot of users of the system, residents of Alaska, that don't reside in the actual port community that the Marine Highway serves. Anchorage being, I guess, a big example of that.
Got you. So, this system has been, from what I've seen since I've been in Alaska, it has been very popular. It is very well, not just needed, but it's not just very much needed, but it's also very well liked by a lot of people. So is that, you know, has that held true throughout your time in this job as deputy commissioner looking over, overseeing the Alaska Marine Highway System? Have you kind of seen that the demand and also the, I guess you would say, popularity of the system has held pretty steady?
I have seen that, and people are pretty passionate about the Alaska Marine Highway System, particularly those folks that rely and depend upon it. It is a method of transportation that provides essential transportation to get people to the goods, services, products, and places that they cannot get to from their community or do not have in their particular community. So in some regards, it's a lifeline in that view. But there is a lot of passion. There's a lot of nostalgia for the Marine Highway System. I've been to a lot of public meetings where I've talked about the Marine Highway System, and invariably somebody will come up to me and say, I was there when the Malaspina first was commissioned and first came to Alaska on that first run, and it was a great day. The bands were out. The community was all out. It was a wonderful and glorious thing. And we do have a long history. I mean, the Marine Highway System has been operating in the state for 53 years as the Alaska Marine Highway System. It had its roots in some earlier vessel transportation systems that the state took over at statehood and created the Marine Highway System. But four of the vessels that were still operating are four of the original vessels that were built and put into service in 1963. So Malaspina, Matanuska, Taku, and the Tustamina are all original fleet vessels. So we do have a long history. There's a lot of nostalgia. There's a lot of passion. And I think in recent times, when we see budget reductions and reductions in service to try and live within those budget reductions, there's a lot more argument and input from the public that, hey, it's not just a nice thing to have. It's not just a nostalgic thing to have. It's an essential thing to have for the economy of the various communities that we serve and the economic livelihood of the people that rely on this system to conduct business within the state of Alaska, to transport goods, fish, things to market, to bring fresh produce and fresh products into the Alaska in a timely fashion, and just to get to those goods and services that are not available in local communities to be able to economically access those things in a different community and get back to their own community in a reasonable, timely fashion at a reasonable expense.
I am going to be talking a lot about the budget situation facing the Marine Highway System today. Most of our topics are going to at least be tied to the budget. Number one, first thing, I'm wondering if you can go into the schedule for the ferries coming up here in the summer. That was just released, and also the schedule leading up to the summer season. Wondering how much how much budget concerns have impacted that schedule.
There obviously have been schedule changes or reductions, I should say, based on budget reductions. In terms of the actual schedule itself, let me address that first. So, in fiscal year 2016, the fiscal year that we're currently in, we're essentially midway through fiscal year 16. We are running a 357-week schedule, and let me explain that term because it's not not as widely understood as I'm familiar with it. So a week of service is a ship running for a week. If we had all 11 ships running every week of the year, never stopped for maintenance, never stopped for anything, but were continually in service, we would have 11 times 52 weeks in a year, or 572 weeks of service possible, with all ships running all the time. That's obviously not practical because we don't run all ships all the time. There's maintenance periods, there's overhauls, there's federal projects, there's cost savings, layups, there's other things that, put them out of service at times. So we use that as a gauge to measure how much service we provide. As I said, in fiscal year 16, we're scheduled to provide 357 weeks of service, ship weeks of service. In years past, we have typically run a 400 or so week of service schedule. If you go back 15 years, we were running a 300 week schedule. And I'll talk about that a little bit as I go through what I've talked about at community presentations that I've done. So that's fiscal 16, 357 weeks. In fiscal year 17, the upcoming fiscal year, and the one with which we're dealing with the legislature now on the governor's proposed budget to fund that schedule, we're proposing about a 320-week schedule, a reduction from this year of some 30 to 35 weeks. There's still a little bit of variability in the fiscal year 17 schedule, some last-minute changes coming in, but clearly a reduction in the amount of service that we are providing based on those budget cuts.
Right, that's a significant reduction. And you said that's based on the budget cuts you know are coming, and are you likely going to see more that haven't been finalized this legislative session?
Well, it's based on budget cuts that the governor and the Office of Management and Budget have implemented. We go through a process. Let me explain our scheduling process and budgeting process. So we go through a process that starts in July or August of each year, where the Marine Highway System and the Department of Transportation for all modes of transportation, but the Marine Highway System gets a meeting with the Office of Management and Budget to discuss the upcoming year's budget and what that will translate to into a schedule. We come up with various proposed schedules, kind of an option menu. Here's status quo, kind of the same thing this year as we did last year. Here's a certain amount of reduction that saves a certain amount of money. Here's a greater reduction that saves a greater amount of money. And here's a very optimistic, more service that costs more money type of schedule. These are the schedules we have to pick from. We work with OMB. We look at the fiscal climate. We look at anticipated budget, the budget environment, which, as you and your listeners, I'm sure, know, for the state is not rosy. And in working with the Office of Management Budget and the governor's office, we come up with, okay, this is the schedule that we're going to plan to run. This is the budget that the governor is going to submit to support that schedule that we plan to run. So this 320-week schedule for fiscal year 17 that I mentioned is based upon a budget that the governor submitted to the legislature to fund the Marine Highway System. That budget, when you boil it right down to brass tacks, is a $92 million undesignated general fund allocation from the state to the Marine Highway System to supplement the operation of the Marine Highway System that is not all self-sustaining. So just so you know, there's really two sources of revenue that the Marine Highway System operates on. Revenues that we generate from selling vehicle car deck space, passenger space, meals on board, cabins, passenger fares, et cetera. That revenue that gets generated, which is about $53.9, $54 million a year, is put into the Marine Highway Fund and rolled back into operating the system. That funds part of our system, but only part of it. Actually, about a third of our system is funded, self-funded by the revenue that it generates. The other two-thirds of the funding that it takes to run the Marine Highway System comes as an appropriation from the legislature. Mm-hmm. And for fiscal year 17, in the governor's budget request, that's a $92 million line item in the budget for the Marine Highway System. That is about a $4.5 million reduction from what it was in fiscal year 16. That is about a $31 million reduction from what it was in fiscal year 2013 when we ran a 400-plus week schedule with all 11 ships running all summer long, some reductions in the wintertime. So clearly we've been on a downward trend in terms of the number of weeks of service we provide, but we work very hard to make sure that when we make those reductions, we do not cut off or isolate any community. We still serve all 33 Alaska communities and the two outside of Alaska that still have ferry service. It's just not as frequent. There is not as much total capacity provided to those communities, but all 33 Alaskan communities and the two outside ones are still served by the Marine Highway System with a level of service that is, you know, certainly not what everybody would request, because it's a reduction from what it used to be, but a level of service that still provides basic essential transportation needs.
Got you. So it's, well, I'm going to walk back a little bit. It's clear that from the numbers you've given us that the amount of money that is being dedicated by the legislature has been going down in the past few years due to budget concerns. So I'm wondering how that is impacting the ferry service in this this region here in South Central Alaska.
Okay, so Homer to Kodiak, as your listeners probably know, is served by essentially only two vessels, the Tustamina primarily and the Kennecott. And the reason for that is that those are the only two vessels we have that have vehicle elevators. All of the docks in Homer, Kodiak, all the way down the Aleutian chain, all of those docks are fixed tide moorings. They're essentially docks on pilings or bulkheads with sheet pile that don't move with the tide. So in order to take into account the tide, the vessel has to have a vehicle elevator system that can adjust and lift vehicles on and off the ship at various different heights relative to the dock. Southeast Alaska is totally different. The moorings here are all floating moorings, essentially, rise and fall with the tide. When the ship ties up, there's drive-on, drive-off capacity for all the vessels. So that's the main difference, and it's a critical difference and critical importance, I guess, to your area, because since there's only two vessels that can provide service in your area, there is a limited ability on the Marine Highway System's part to do any cost savings measures there. And I guess this is best explained by an example. So think about Prince William Sound. Typically in Prince William Sound, we have two vessels operating in the summer, Fast Ferry Chiniga and the motor vessel Aurora, a traditional monohull ferry. In tough budget times, we can eliminate one of those vessels from service, continue to provide service to all the communities with one remaining vessel, and A, not get anybody off from service, but B, save money by not operating both ferries in the same area. I can't do that in Southwest Alaska. The Tustamina, for example, will, and I may regret this, but the Tustamina will never go into a cost savings layup where we just put it out of service for a while to save money, because it is the only vessel that can provide the service to the majority of the communities in Southwest Alaska. So keeping with our goal of make reductions but don't cut anybody off completely from ferry service, that's not consistent with doing anything to the Tustamina, because taking the Tustamina out of service for anything other than essential maintenance means there's people, communities, that are going without ferry service in Southwest Alaska. So what does that mean in terms of scheduling for you and your community? Essentially, you'll see the Tustamina operating there on a fairly normal schedule. You get frequent Kodiak to Homer service, occasional stops in the smaller villages, and then in the summertime, obviously, the Tustamina goes out the chain out to Unalaska to provide some service out the Aleutian chain in the summertime only. When the Tustamina does go out the chain in the summer, we shift the Kennecott over to continue to provide the Homer to Kodiak connection during that week it takes the Tustamina to run out to Unalaska and back, so that the Homer to Kodiak connection is not left without service. I don't think you'll see, you won't see any changes in the Tustamina's schedule, I don't think. The Kennecott and whether it can come over and backfill for the Tustamina may be at a higher risk level because that's a second ship providing service in the same area. But as of right now, and the schedule still calls for this, the Kennecott will be backfilling for the Testamina when those Aleutian chain runs happen. So not much of a schedule change, really, for you and your community.
I see. A lot of people will be happy about that. So I'm going to go ahead and give out our phone number so people can call in and pose some questions to you, and then I will continue with the conversation. First, you can call toll-free. You're listening to KBBI here, the coffee table. You can call toll-free 1-800-979-5224. That's 1-800-979-5224. And if you'd like to call us here and you're here locally, call 907-235-7721, 907-235-7721. This is the coffee table, and we're discussing the Alaska Marine Highway System. So, Deputy Commissioner Neusel, I am wondering if you can go back a little bit. You mentioned before that because you can't really reduce the service given by the Testamina, provided by the Testamina, you can't really take it out of service for a little bit. I'm wondering, and you said that you kind of regret that. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
No, I can. I don't regret that. I don't think we're going to take the Testamina out. The reason I said I might regret that is it's always not a good idea to say we will never take the Testamina out of service for anything but maintenance. I can't predict the future, so I put a caveat on that. No intention of taking the Testamina out for any cost savings layups or anything like that.
Got you. Okay.
But good listening skills on your part, though, because I did say that.
I appreciate it. Glad that we got that cleared up. So before I go into our next topic, I'm going to go ahead and give us a little bit of a break, let you take a breather and grab some water if you need some. We'll be right back, though. This is the coffee table. Thanks for joining us. We're discussing the Alaska Marine Highway System and changes to that with Deputy Commissioner Mike Neusel. We'll be right back.